Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair has covered the CFL, 4 Olympics, and 8 World Series, including one during an earthquake. So yeah, live radio is a piece of cake. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Rays 3, first pitch to Tim Beckham from Todd Redman, hit the deep left field, running out of room and jumping the left fielder, and what a catch Kevin Pillar just made, scaling the top of the wall.
That was Jerry Howard's call last night. Kevin Pillar, if you have not seen that catch, get your ass to the Sportsnet website, sportsnet.ca, and take a look at it. The Blue Jays. Some of you thought they were never going to win a home game or hit a home run. The Blue Jays beat the Tampa Bay Rays 12-7 last night. Lots of offense from the Blue Jays. Couple of second inning bunts. Now, you remember yesterday I had a set to with a caller about bunting in the second inning. And, of course, they went ahead and did that. Big difference between bunting for a base hit and asking Russ Martin to sacrifice in the second inning. And it was interesting because during batting practice yesterday, John Gibbons was talking to a group of us around the cage, and Dalton Pompey was taking batting practice, and Gibbons made the point. He said, Dalton's got to drop a bunt. You know, just the way he said it. I don't know if he was forecasting or anything like that, but Dalton Pompey did end up dropping a bunt part of a big inning. And it was, you know what? It was a classic Blue Jays offense. There was some power. There was some, taking the extra base, some good speed in the base paths, a little bit of bunting, taking advantage of the slow turf at the Rogers Center. It was kind of an all-encompassing offensive performance by the Blue Jays. I guess if you're looking for a quote-unquote issue, it would be the work of Todd Redman in his last inning of relief. And, you have to preface it by saying, the guy was being stretched out a bit. You were getting to the point where, I don't know if you'd say he was in fumes, but you were getting to the point early in the season where he's probably going to lose effectiveness. But, yeah, there has to be some concern. There has to be some concern with that. And also, I would imagine, some concern with Marco Estrada. And that's where we're going to start with Buck Martinez, our Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet, who joins us out of the gate in the Jeff Blair Show. Buck, before we talk about Pillar's catch, the game, and I also want to talk a little bit about what Aaron Sanchez has to do in tonight's final game of the series. What is up with Marco Estrada? I thought, is your sense that there may be something wrong with him?
No.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I haven't gotten that sense. Nobody's suggesting that. I think that, John Gibbons wants to get this club off to a good start. And even the way he used Castro in last night's game suggested, right now, he's more concerned about getting off to a good start. And, he used Castro early in that game last night. And then, he was hopeful of getting Redman to finish the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you look at the game tonight, three games against Braves and then an off day. So I think he was trying to conserve as many relievers as he could. And then in the ninth inning, not only did Redman not get out of it, Hines pitched, a third, and then he had to bring Cecil in to throw three pitches, and Castro was up in the bullpen. So I think it just suggests how important John Gibbons feels that the month of April is to his ball club and getting off to a good start.
In conversation with Buck Martinez on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, let's talk about the game itself last night. Pretty much, it was, I don't know, what did Paul Revere say? One if by land, two if by sea. I don't know what it is, but it was, that was the type of game the Blue Jays had. We're going to do this. We're going to score runs this way. It really was an all-encompassing offensive performance, wasn't it?
It sure was. And it shows just how deep the lineup is. It shows how versatile they are in their ability to score. Everybody was up in arms because they hadn't had a home run in the first two games. And then we saw, Donaldson crosses up the shift. Batista goes deep. Smoke walks the next inning. Pilar gets a single to right, and then Pompey bunts to load the bases. Now, this is an offense that can do a lot of things. There's more speed in the lineup. You've got Reyes, who looks healthy. You've got Pompey and Devin Travis, bottom of the order. Bottom of the order has been terrific for this team to start off. And if they continue to just get on base, they don't have to be stars. If they get on base for the top of the order, this team's going to have a lot of games in which they're going to score 10, 12 runs a game.
Buck, when you told us in spring training, when you gave us kind of the classic description of Kevin Pilar on the air, a guy that if you show up at the game and watch him, you might go, okay player. But if you watch him for a week, you end up looking back and thinking, well, the guy did this, the guy did that. The guy can be the type of player who helps you win. He made a play last night that even if you had just dropped in for that one game, you were going to remember that play. Are we just seeing a guy who has hit well at every level just suddenly, it's just suddenly all clicked for him at the major league level?
You know, I don't think it's suddenly all just clicked for him. I think this has been a process. And okay. Kevin told me when he first came up the big leagues, he couldn't really fathom that he was in the big leagues. He thought, I've never been a big star. He said, even in high school, I didn't get drafted out of high school. I went to a D2 school. I didn't play in the frontline schools in Southern California. He said, I've always been kind of overlooked, and I've had to play with a chip on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And first year he came up, he was overmatched. He was swinging the balls in the other batter's box. And now he has learned that he belongs, and he is a major league player, and he's a very good major league player. And he does so many things that make the other players realize what you have to do every single day. And you know what? You can compare him to Hunter Pence. He has the same kind of style, hair on fire. Everything is, going to be 100% no matter what he does. And, people criticize him for the catch he made in Baltimore on Chris Davis. The game was lopsided. He slammed into the wall. But if you're going to play, you play right every day. And you never know how that's going to impact the games the next day, 2 days later, a week later. You can't go out there and say, today I'm going to play hard and tomorrow I'm going to take it easy. Kevin Pilar plays hard all the time.
Buck, Josh Donaldson moved into the number two spot in the order for the first time this season. I get singles in the first. He scored on Jose Bautista's two-run home run. He gets another single. He had an RBI double in the fifth. A lot of people kind of look at juggling the lineup as being kind of the magical answer to, or sorry, juggling the batting order as being a magical answer to everything and anything that's ailing a team. As someone who's managed, what does that do for a hitter when you do change the lineup? Like, did it really have an impact on what Josh Donaldson did last night?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think what it did, it shows how versatile these players are. I think Donaldson getting that base hit through the right side with the shift on, and he looked into the dugout and said, you can't play me like that. And that's what you're going to see more and more as the year goes on. Players are going to be offended by this and say, I'm not a one-dimensional player. I can do more things than you think I can, and I'm going to show you. And I think you're going to see the shift straighten out. But what it shows about this team is you could hit Donaldson second, Martin second, Pilar second, Pompey second, and Travis second. You could hit any of those players second, or you could hit them up in the lineup anywhere you want to. Mm-hmm. These guys are flexible and they're versatile, and I think we have seen early on that Dalton Pompey got a little bit down in Montreal. He was having a couple of bad at-bats. The coaches talked to him saying, hey, you can play every day. Don't let three at-bats affect how you play. And now we have seen him. He's not going to worry where he's hitting. He's just going to go out and try to have a good at-bat here and there and do things that will help this team win. I think it's a great mix.
Devin Travis is showing us, Buck, that doesn't impress us? I talked to John. I talked to John around the batting cage yesterday, and we were having a discussion about Drew Hutchison and John said, talk to Devin Travis, because Devin played with Drew in a high school all-star game in Florida, and Drew was the shortstop. And I thought, okay, so Devin comes around the cage and, John goes, hey, Dev, or Devo, whatever you call him, come here for a minute. Tell us a story about, this thing with Hutchison. And then he started to kind of relay the story. And you really get a sense from this kid that he understands all the sensibilities and all the sensitivities of being a baseball player. You know what I mean? Like, he's comfortable in that environment, whether it's dealing with the media, dealing with his coaches, just those kind of spur of the moment things you see from a player that really suggest he has an understanding of the moment, isn't he?
Well, you know, and Hutchison's the one that told me about them playing in the high school game because he was proud. He said, "I turned it into a play with Devin Travis."
Mm-hmm.
but when you talk about Devin Travis, and you don't really realize the impact of it, but Devin Travis has been a winner his whole life. Little League World Series, College World Series, Major Leagues. And that has an impact. And I think Alex Anthopoulos, in his 6 years as a general manager, has recognized the importance of character and winning attitudes. Donaldson has it. Martin has it. Travis has it. Now the younger players are all getting it. And if you look at the bench during the course of a game, there's a lot of baseball conversation going on. You see Bautista talking to Pilar about his at-bats. You see Jose talking to Martin about his at-bats. And Donaldson's coming over saying, "Hey, I saw this with this guy." This is how you build a winning team. And this team is starting to sense, you know, we got something special going on here. And we've got to pull for one another. We've got to play for one another. And you can't take any at-bats off or take any innings off. And they're playing great ball right now.
So what do we need to see tonight from Aaron Sanchez?
More fastballs. More fastballs, more commitment to the fastball. Throw it to the middle of the plate and let it move.
Mm-hmm.
Be aggressive with it. And, you know, I think he was disappointed in his first start. A lot of these young players have had a lot going on this first week's, 2 weeks of the season. Their families have traveled with them for the openers, and you don't blame them for that. It's, you know, that's the beauty of having family support. But there have been a lot of distractions, you know. There's some sightseeing, some dinners and everything else. I think that the younger kids are going to get settled into the routine of being big league players. And you know, they're going to get over this. They're not in awe of the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They're in awe of the things off the field. And I think that's going to settle down, and I think they're going to be just fine.
Russ Martin will be behind the plate tonight with Aaron Sanchez. I mean, John Gibbons explaining, you know, his decision yesterday, talking about needing to give Russ a rest, but also making it pretty clear, as you guys have talked about throughout spring training, that he really wants Russ to work with the young guys in particular. But, Buck, I wanted to ask you what you've seen from Russ at the plate. And I talked to Russ a bit yesterday, and he's had slow starts before. Yeah, I mean, he was like, we were talking about, he was 2-for-31 a couple of years ago. He had an April where he ended up hitting 163 at one point, and he kind of rebounded from that. He went on a run when he was hitting 2-for-31. He ended up going 18 for his next 44. But are you seeing something at the plate? Is it just a matter of him opening up a little bit? Is there a small adjustment he needs to make?
Jeff, just think about this. In the history of free agency, there's a tendency for free agents who sign with a new team to come in and want to prove that they're worthy of that beautiful contract. And no matter how much experience you have, it takes them a while. Brian McCann went through it last year with the Yankees. You see it all the time when guys are with a team for the first time, you know, and they don't have an ego. They just want to say, "Hey, thank you very much for the contract, and I want to be the player that you think I am." And, you know, they just go a little bit away from their normal routine, and I think Russell's going through that a little bit. I think he's had a lot on his plate, obviously, with the Montreal thing and then learning a new pitching staff. He's catching guys in a game during the regular season that he hasn't caught much.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have the adrenaline of a game for a pitcher, the ball moves a little sharper, the breaks a little bit bigger, and things in the dirt bounce a little differently because it's in-game action. You know, when you're catching a bullpen, those guys – in spring training throw an inning here and there, and Russell might not be in the game, so he's catching a lot of these guys for the first time. So there's a lot of things that are different for him, and it's just getting used to a new situation. I think everybody realizes that Russell's going to be just fine.
Buck, it was great to do this today. We'll see you down at the ballpark.
All right, Jeff, you have a great day.
You too. That is Buck Martinez, our Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. So get you set for tonight. There will be baseball. You know, there's hockey. Four hockey games, Penguins and Rangers, Wings Lightning, Wild and Blues, and our Winnipeg Jets playing the Anaheim Ducks. That's at 10:30 p.m. I'm going to have to PVR that. I'm not going to stay up to watch that game. That'll be in Sportsnet Ontario, though. You all should stay up and watch it. We're going to adopt the Jets, I think, is our team. And tonight, there will be baseball tonight. Game four, final game of the four-game series against the Rays. Jays looking for a split. Chris Archer, if you're gonna pick a visiting starting pitcher to go see, this is the guy to this week. This is the guy to go see. Chris Archer, 1-1, got an ERA of 2.13. He's one of the very, 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 very best pitchers in baseball. He'll take on Aaron Sanchez, who struggled in his first start. We keep forgetting this. It was his first career major league start. He was up in the bullpen last year. First pitch set to fly right after 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and also on Sportsnet 1. And then after the game, Mike Wilner will take your calls immediately following the game on the Blue Jays talking Sportsnet 590. And at 6:30, Blue Jays Central live with Jamie Campbell and Greg Zahn. They will be down at the Rogers Center. That will be on Sportsnet 1. So, as I said, four games on tap tonight. Penguins and Rangers at 7 p.m. on Hockey Night. Sorry, on CBC. I keep calling it Hockey Night in Canada. Red Wings at Lightning, Game 1. That's on Sportsnet Ontario. Wild and Blues. That is going to be a very interesting series. That's at 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. And then Canada's team, the Winnipeg Jets, take on the Anaheim Ducks. That's at 10:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Jeff Merrick, host of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the CHL on Sportsnet, and co-host of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So we're led to believe, Jeff, and this probably isn't a big surprise, we're led to believe that there will be no supplemental discipline for P.K. Subban, which I think is as it should be. But I really have an issue with what Dave Cameron did. And, you know, we had a couple of people on Twitter, and you knew this was going to happen. People are automatically going to go Bertuzzi-Moore anytime a coach does that. I mean, Jeff, and you know Dave, because, I mean, you've been around, you know him from junior hockey as well. Did it surprise you as someone who's known Dave Cameron?
You know, it's interesting, too, because at the beginning of the press conference yesterday, Dave Cameron was asked a question about it, and his answer was very brief. And then he said to the reporter, would you like to pay my fine? I don't feel like getting fined here, so I'm not going to give you my real answer. The press conference continued, and then he almost talked himself into this maybe not so thinly veiled threat that we all saw yesterday and you talked about last hour with your callers. So Dave Cameron's not that guy, and I know what he was trying to do. I don't think Dave Cameron was out there. I don't think he was trying to pull a Crawford. I don't think he was out there deliberately saying, we are going to try to injure someone from the Montreal Canadiens, as much as he was trying to lobby for a suspension for P.K. Subban. This was the moment of opportunity for the Ottawa Senators. Max Pacioretty is out. If you have a chance of taking two of the three big guns out of this series, you do it. My issue was, I'm with you on this one, Jeff. I really do think that Cameron went more than a little bit too far, because you're right. Any situation like this, it's all going to be under the umbrella of Moore and Bertuzzi. And after that happened, you can ask any player in the NHL, everything changed. The way coaches talk to players in the dressing room changed. The way coaches talked in public changed. The way players talked about other players changed. So you have to assume that this was a slip of the tongue from Dave Cameron. If he wanted a do-over, I'm sure he would take it and would say something a little bit different. But I kind of looked at it and said, it may optically look and sound like he's saying, we're going after Habs players. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm turning Greibel loose on Lars Eller again, but I think what he was more trying to do was trying to lobby for a suspension for Subban.
In conversation with Jeff Merrick on the Jeff Blair Show, what else did you see last night? I mean, that obviously that's a dominant storyline, but I stayed up for that Blackhawks-Predators game, which was just remarkable. What do you do if you're Joel Quenneville? You've got to go back to Crawford, don't you?
Yes, you do. And I know the popular decision right now is go to Darling. He's a hot hand. He was fantastic. He, you know, came in, you're down 3, Cobb, and he helped turn things around. You guys picked up a big win in Nashville. But if you look at the resume of Corey Crawford, you can't just base decisions based on what did you do for me in the past. But if you look down the stretch, I mean, Pat Kane goes out of the lineup, and doom and gloom for the Chicago Blackhawks. One of the reasons they were such a competitive team down the stretch is specifically that last dozen games was Corey Crawford. And I don't think you can let one period where he surrenders 3 goals on 12 shots scuttle him from the lineup. And let's not forget here, if you're Joel Quenneville, you're saying to yourself, we're looking for a long run in the playoffs here. We just can't play the short game-to-game game. We need to worry about, you know, going long in these playoffs. I think you have to go back to Corey Crawford. I don't think, I mean, if it were a desperation, backs against the wall, you're down 3-1, then yeah, then you go to Darling. But right now, you're up 1-0. You got what you wanted out of Nashville. Now you try to make sure that you still have that great relationship with your number one goaltender. I'm with you, Jeff. You go back to Corey Crawford.
Jeff Merrick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The series that I think, I mean, I've been having a little bit of fun with it, calling the Jets Canada's team. I'm sure they're not Canada's team in about
they're
four.
They're fun. They're fun to watch. It's a great story.
It is a great story. What do they have to do, Jeff? What do they have to do to beat Anaheim in this series? I mean, Eddie Olchuk said this might be one of the first 10-game series in the history of the NHL because both of these teams are going to wear each other down.
Yeah, they are. And don't be surprised if the Winnipeg Jets win this series. Whenever you have a big series like this, you develop new superstars, and it's a debutante's ball for one of these players. Don't be surprised if the new superstar across Canada, if Winnipeg is able to defeat the Anaheim Ducks in this best of seven, if Blake Wheeler comes out an even bigger star than he already is. He's huge in Winnipeg, but you can almost feel that this is, you know, we're on the precipice of Blake Wheeler taking that next step in hockey stardom. I still think, you know, the key to getting to the Anaheim Ducks is getting to their goaltending. And you want to compound that with the fact that Bruce Boudreau, as efficient a head coach as he's been in the regular season, has had problems with goaltenders and how to handle them in the playoffs. We certainly saw that in Washington. We have seen that with the Anaheim Ducks as well. So if you can get big bodies going to the net, going hard at the Anaheim netminders, I really do think that Winnipeg has a chance here. And let's not forget, too, Winnipeg is a large team.
Mm-hmm.
Winnipeg have big bodies, guys that can move their feet, a really good blue line. And although I don't think the save percentage stays up around the 960 we saw in the last three games of the season, they do have good goaltending with Pavlik. Specifically with Pavlik in those last three games, didn't surrender any goals. So I wouldn't be surprised to see both goaltenders. Wouldn't be surprised to see both Pavlik and Hutchinson in this series. But this one, I mean, this is the one that I may be most looking forward to out of all the series. I knew Chicago and Nashville was going to be a get at them early and it was going to be a scratch and claw. But the one that I'm most looking forward to is Winnipeg and Anaheim.
Is it the hardest series to call?
It's weird because it shouldn't be. I mean, Anaheim was a juggernaut that ripped through the NHL regular season like a hog through truffles, and the Winnipeg Jets, you know, scraped and clawed and had four key defensemen out for a month and, you know, had to earn every single point that they got. And you almost want to say to yourself, well, just getting to the playoffs is their Stanley Cup. But I'll tell you, it's bizarre. You look at it on paper and you look at it in the standings and you should say, well, Anaheim in a walk. But most people that I talk to, I mean, I don't know what an upset is anymore in the NHL, Jeff, but most people that I talked to are picking the Jets in this one.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It's kind of interesting. You know, I talked to Chris Johnson about this. There are a lot of people pick the Senators over the Habs, too.
Goals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Carey Price is one thing, but Carey Price can't join the rush.
Right.
And the Habs have had a hard time scoring. And I think, you know, the one thing about the Ottawa game last night, You can look at the outcome in two ways. We had this talk yesterday on the panel with Scott Morrison and Billy Jaffe. You can look at the outcome if you're Ottawa one of two ways. One, you can say to yourself, wow, you know what? We got three pucks past Carey Price. Did we squander an opportunity to win one? Because Carey Price doesn't normally surrender three goals. Thank you very much. Or you look at it and say, hang on a second here. We got three pucks past Carey Price. Why can't we do that again? Maybe he's not that invincible wall that we saw through the 82-game season.
Mr. Merrick, it was great of you to do this morning. Thanks so much.
Ottawa is the Vancouver of the East. That may be the line of the day, Jeff.
Apparently, there are people who disagree with me, but I'm surprised there are more people who seem to agree with me, though not Merrick, necessarily in Ottawa. It's Jeff. Well, I just find them, they always, seriously, man, they always whine.
Well,
always.
The owner doesn't do the team any favors by calling for, you know, forensic audits after the Carlson Matt Cook incident.
So, no, that's true.
You know, you look at Vancouver, and outside of Rogers Arena, there's that famous, you know, statue of Roger Nelson waving the white flag, which sort of colors a lot of how Vancouver feels about their hockey team, which is martyrdom. Right?
That's right.
We're getting screwed here by the officials. So, walking to the rink, that's the first image you're greeted with. And I don't think it's as bad in Ottawa. This is the other side of the mountain thing going on in Vancouver. I don't think it's as bad in Ottawa, but I can see your point. It makes for good calling.
This is good martyrdom. I like that. Absolutely like that. Mr. Merrick, have a great day, and we'll do this again. Thanks, man.
We'll talk soon, pal.
All right. That's Jeff Merrick. I'll read out what he does in the station. The Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. They've got a junior podcast as well. He's co-hosting it with Sam Cosentino. And, of course, the CHL and Sportsnet and host of Stanley Cup playoffs as well. So, basically, Merrick does almost everything. And he's also hosting Hockey Central at noon today. I'd like to see his business card. You know, his business card says continued on other side, right? Anyhow, we appreciate Jeff Merrick joining us. So just to recap, one, Ottawa is the Vancouver of the East. Two, their fans do whine. Three, the Penguins and Rangers are playing game one at 7 p.m. on CBC tonight. Four, the Wings and Lightning will be at 7:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. Five, the Wild and Blues, game one, 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. Finally, our Winnipeg Jets are taking on the Anaheim Ducks. Game one, 10:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. There will be no whining from Winnipeg Jets fans. They're above it. And, of course, we'll have baseball tonight. Chris Archer against Aaron Sanchez. First pitch set to fly shortly after 7 p.m. at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Mike Wilner with the call of the game. Buck Martinez, Pat Tabler, and the one and only Barry Davis. You guys see Barry Davis has got a glove? He's holding the glove down by the when he's beside the dugout. Did you see the room beside that dugout? I mean, you could have a flag football game. Barry doesn't need a glove. He could just run. Anyhow, Barry Davis will be there as the game will be on Sportsnet 1. And, of course, Wilner will take your calls after the game. The Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hey, guess what? There's a Toronto team that's in the playoffs. And there's a Toronto team that might actually win the playoff round. There are children who don't know what this feels like. Hell, there may be parents who can't remember seeing a Toronto team win a playoff round. The Raptors are getting set for their first round matchup with the Washington Wizards, 12:30 p.m. on Saturday. Raptors got the primo TV slot, didn't they? It'll be the Wizards and Raptors. Matt Devlin is our Raptors play-by-play voice in Sportsnet. And Matt Devlin will join us when the Jeff Blair Show returns. On the home of the Blue Jays and the home of Ottawa Senators haters everywhere, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Paul Pierce always got to say something. He said something last year, he just got to say something. Just let him talk. I care less what he said. He just better hope, however it got to work, win or something, so he won't see what the it is, personally.
That is DeMar DeRozan responding to Paul Pierce's assertion that the Toronto Raptors do not have it. It'll be Pierce and the Wizards against the Toronto Raptors, the best of seven first-round playoff series, which will start Saturday at 12:30 at the Air Canada Centre. Of course, Paul Pierce. I was going to say, I'm sure Raptors fans, the initial reaction is screw Paul Pierce. But you know what? Paul Pierce may have kind of earned the right to say that, considering how often he's been a thorn in the side of the Raptors. And, what the hell? It's good, clean fun. Isn't it? Matt Devlin is our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter at @Matt_Devlin. Matt Devlin joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. Matt, that was all good, clean fun, wasn't it?
Oh, I enjoy that. You know, look, it. I think at the end of the day, you know, Paul Pierce, prior to the playoffs, is kind of sending a message. He went to Washington, you know, clearly to you know, get to the NBA Finals. He felt that that was a team that would have the opportunity to do that. And that was a wide-ranging, you know, article in ESPN, as you know, that he even covered Ray Allen, which that, you know, kind of raised a few eyebrows about his comments there. And then, you know, he talked about the Brooklyn Nets and how it was really just, you know, himself and Kevin Garnett that, you know, really had it as far as, you know, we know what it takes. And Darren Williams and others always wanted to take days off, didn't want to practice. You know, Paul Pierce saying that he and KG were the ones that, you know, kind of kept everything going and kept everything together, which, you know, look, he's a future Hall of Famer. And if you go back to last year, game one, you know, he hit the big shot at the end. And I think that this is the matchup that the Toronto Raptors players wanted. And I think it's the matchup that, quite honestly, you know, from people that I've spoken to, the Wizards did not want. So it all gets underway Saturday, and I can't wait to see how it unfolds.
Do the Raptors lack the it, whatever the it is, in your mind?
Yeah, I think that's the question. What is it? You know, how do you define it? You know, if we look around the NBA, San Antonio has it. LeBron and the Cavaliers have it. Why? Because of LeBron. Last year, Miami had it because of LeBron. You know, is it good enough to beat the Washington Wizards in the first round and go into the second round and potentially see Atlanta? Or, you know, do the Brooklyn Nets, you know, find their way there? I think that they have certainly it as far as being able to knock off the Washington Wizards in the first round. But it as far as an NBA Finals championship, this is still, and I think if you talk to Dwayne Casey, this is still, you know, a growth period with the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, we've talked about that on so many different occasions. It's an organization that under Dwayne has gone 23 to 34 to 48 to 49, nearly hitting, you know, 50 wins. And we could all look back on one game or two games during the course of the year. New Orleans certainly stands out to me on the road up 18, that you get that and, you know, you got 50 wins, but such is life.
You know, Matt, when I look at this series, they're you know, and you look at matchups and you try to come up with, you know, who the difference makers may be. I mean, both teams obviously rely on their point guards. You can go through the individual matchups. But I come away from it, and I admit I'm a bit of a – I admit, well, A, I'm a Raptors fan. B, I'm a Dwayne Casey fan. C, I'm also a Raptors optimist. But I think the Raptors have a little more depth. The thing that concerns me more than anything else is – just is the pick and roll coverage they're going to have to get against the Wizards, because boy, they do that a lot. I mean, I don't know if they do it more than anybody in the league, but every time you watch it on TV, it certainly seems like they run the pick and roll more than anybody in the league.
Well, there's definitely some concerns. It's interesting if you go back and you look at, you know, the three games during the regular season, how much weight, you know, does that carry? Is it ultimately just confidence if you're the Raptors, and maybe lack of confidence if you're the Washington Wizards? And how much does that play into a team's psyche? The first game that they played, Jeff, was a blowout. And after that, the next two games were decided by a total of 6 points. That's it, including an overtime game. And so for the Raptors, you know, the thing that stands out to me, if we take away the first game, over the last two games, they were outscored, and this speaks to what you just, you know, discussed, as I'm sitting here crunching numbers this morning. You know, they were outscored in the paint 82 to 58 in points in the paint. And then also only one game this season did Bradley Beal appear against the Toronto Raptors. And I think that that's a key factor, because why, he can shoot the three and it opens things up a little bit. So, you know, three-point shooting was certainly a factor during the regular season against these, you know, two teams. The Raptors shot 42%, Washington just 28%. I think they did a great job on Gortat. He had a total of 19 points. Lou Williams certainly could be an X factor. He scored 13, 19, and 27. But specifically, you know, as we both know, the pick-and-roll coverage has been an issue. It's a learning process with Jonas. It's why we've seen on so many occasions, and people questioned it throughout the regular season, you know, Amir Johnson and Patrick Patterson on the floor. Why isn't Jonas there? Had nothing to do with offense and everything to do with defense. And so, you know, at least, you know, Dwayne Casey has that option to go in that direction again. And certainly, as we've seen over the course of the last four games, we, you know, have somebody like Tyler Hansbrough that Dwayne Casey can utilize if, you know, foul trouble gets in into it, and somebody that has, you know, certainly ramped up his minutes over the last week.
It's kind of interesting because we spent a lot of time this year talking about how, and it's not just this year, but how the NBA game has transitioned a bit away from being, you know, let's try to bludgeon each other in the paint and see who's the last man standing. But there's going to be a bit of that with the Washington Wizards. And I'm with you. I can see Tyler Hansbrough. I'm not saying he's going to be the player of the series or anything, but I can see him being called upon for significant minutes, especially on the road, I think.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, and he admits to it, he's a show, hard show. And that means when you get up and trap in that pick and roll that you're going to stay up there. And then you're going to be able to recover and, you know, cover either the pop or the roll. And I think that he's somebody that is so active defensively. You know, the rebounding has certainly, you know, been an issue for the Raptors, as we know, from a defensive standpoint. So at least it opens up another option for Dwayne as he looks down, you know, his roster. It's going to be a tight rotation. You understand that. But as we all know, that given situations, depending upon fouls and or certain matchups, you know, you have that option to go there. And, you know, it's to me, a team with the Raptors that heads into this, they kind of know now maybe what to expect, where last year they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you get more out of Terrence Ross in this postseason? 29% last year from the field. You know, that to me is going to be key. It's also a team that, as you know, Jeff, in covering this team and talking to fans, and you get the sense that everybody's been waiting for this. This is the matchup they wanted. This is the season's going to be defined by this first round, you know, like it or not. As successful as the season was, and it was the most successful season in the history of the organization on their 20th anniversary, you get off to a 24-7 start. And then here are the postseason, and everybody said, what would be a successful season getting out of the first round? Well, you know, it's now in front of them. And, you know, another player, you know, there's two other guys that I think that as you look at this series, last year Vasquez and Patterson were key in the postseason. And interestingly enough, when the Raptors were 24-7, Jeff, Patrick Patterson was shooting 46% from three-point range. It was a big part of why the Raptors are successful, that stretch four. Since that time, inclusive of last night, less than 30% from three-point range. And he was able last night to kind of find his rhythm, you know, make a couple of threes. I think that was important. I think Kyle playing at the level he played last night was important just for him to get a sense and a feel of, okay, you know, this can happen for me. So there's a lot of, you know, different individual components to this. And then collectively, do they come together and are the Raptors able to go where, you know, they've only been one other time, and that's to the second round. And I think that they're a team that's going to get to the second round.
You know, the I don't know if the basketball gods did us as fans a favor or what, but San Antonio and the Clippers is your first round matchup. It's pretty hard not to get a little excited by that, isn't it?
Well, there's no doubt. Look at how over the course of the last week in the West, I mean, if you talk about, you know, how we discussed, you know, what was going to happen in the East, I mean, the West was even more chaotic and crazy when you look at all the fluctuation. I mean, one minute, you know, the Houston Rockets are, you know, third, the next minute they're sixth, and then you're back up at second, you know? I mean, it's just absolutely amazing to see how it all unfolded. I do know this, and talking to Kevin McHale, he said, Matt, there's one team that I want to avoid in the first round, and that's the San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how did they operate down the stretch? Well, they were one of the best teams, and here they are, you know, San Antonio Clippers. And if you are Golden State, you're just like, oh, man, thankfully we didn't get OKC.
I know.
But you're going to get the next best thing that's coming along in this league that, you know, because he plays in New Orleans, a very small market, because they haven't been on the national stage, well, you know, he hasn't been on, quote unquote, the national stage since winning a title and being the most outstanding player in the Final Four, and that's Anthony Davis. And wait till you see him. You know, he is just a tremendous young talent in this league.
Yeah, it seems it's kind of sad, at least for me, to not see Oklahoma City in there. But I'm with you. I'm really looking forward to seeing. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does on the big NBA stage. And you know, it's as someone who kind of likes the Golden State Warriors as well. I like that matchup for the Warriors.
Yeah, well, I do too, and I think it's the best case scenario for Steve Kerr and Golden State. What a tremendous year they've had, and Steph Curry. It's just a phenomenal, you know, young man, but also a player. And also to speak, you know, to how delicate this is, and there are windows of opportunity, you know, with respect to, you know, professional sports. You know, with the NBA, there's only been 9 NBA champions since 1980. That's it, just 9. Mm-hmm. And the progression that people believe exists, it doesn't. The progression of, you know, a team makes the first round. So next year you're going to make the second. And then after the second, you're going to make the third. It just doesn't happen like that. And in fact, if you're Oklahoma City, they went to the conference finals, as we all know, and lost, and then came back the next year, went to the NBA finals and lost. And then that third time, you know, as an organization, I think you get a sense, and it's not the proper sense if you look from a historical standpoint, that you're going to be able in that third year to go back and win it all. Well, what did they do? They decided to not go over the cap when they had a phenomenal talent in James Harden. They decided not to, you know, amnesty Kendrick Perkins. They trade Harden because you had Durant, but Durant ends up injured. You couldn't foresee that, project that into the future. But the interesting piece to all that is this, that only 4 times in the history of this league, and the last time it happened was the Detroit Pistons, the mm-hmm. Bad Boys, where you went to a conference finals loss, came back the next year, won that conference finals, went to the NBA finals and lost, and then in that third year, you capture it all and you win an NBA title. There is no natural progression in professional sports, as much as we all want to believe that there is. There are windows of opportunity, and you got to seize them when they're right there in front of you.
Matt, it was great to do this. Should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to talking to you. NBA playoffs are great. There's some great matchups. Thanks again, and I'm with you. I mean, I think this is what a lot of Raptors fans wanted and a lot of players wanted. Paul Pierce, let's have at him.
You know what? Have at it. Bring it on. And I think the Raptors are going to head to the second round.
Yeah, I'm with you in this. Thanks, Matt.
All right, all the best.
It's Matt Devlin, our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. And again, 12:30 p.m., the Raps and the Washington Wizards get it going Saturday. That's it for the Blair Show. Baseball Central with Kevin Barker and yours truly just around the corner. Rex Hudler, Kansas City Royals TV analyst. And I'm going to apologize in advance because Rex never gets excited about anything. Rex Hudler's going to, I'm going to have to, bad enough I got to keep Barker seatbelted into the chair here. Now we got Rex Hudler coming on. Baseball Central's next. Have a great day, everybody.